Birth, Chapter 27. John was making steady progress on the trail roads through the forests of Camp David. They were paved perhaps 30 years ago, and the condition had deteriorated, especially during the 8 years Obama was president. Normally, funds from the Federal Highway Fund were carved out for maintenance of the largely wilderness area. Snow and ice took their toll, but fallen branches and leaves from the hardwoods and small rock slides were a constant source of maintenance for the preserve. Rhino, an Orphan, got out several times to pull large branches or rocks to the side so they could get through. "We're getting close now," said John. "The access door opens to a large hallway that is about 6 miles long. That leads to a domestic water supply area that branches off to the main hallway leading to the communications center in Building E." "I haven't seen any sign of those guys in the Humvees," said Dick. "Kyle, are you picking up anything on your receiver?" "There's a ham signal and some FM stuff coming from the north, but I assume that is the business at Raven Rock," he said, tapping on his touchpad. "There's a clearing up ahead," said Smith into his wristwatch. "Stop just short of that, and let us do some scouting." "Roger," came the reply from Jones. The vans slowed and stopped, while Jones and Smith jumped out. Smith ran up to the front van. "I think we need to call in the president," said Jones as Smith approached. "I don't like it. It's a sniper's paradise here," whispered Smith. "You really think they'll try to take us here, with all this surveillance and civilians?" Smith motioned for John to come out and talk to them, then pointed to Hadid in the rear van. John opened the driver's door and skipped around the front of the van to meet them. His tall frame moved with the flexibility that decades mastering martial arts will produce as he buttoned his center coat button. Hadid slid out of the driver's seat and came around the other side. "We need to call POTUS and have him join us," said Smith. "We think they will try to stop us inside the facility, but we're not sure where. What do we have in the way of weapons?" "I have my Glock and this," said Hadid, producing a narrow, curved blade that had the look of ancient origin. "That's pretty close quarter," said Smith. "Anything else?" "Well, there's an M60 in the back and some short rifles in the combat case," said Jones. "Well, that's more like it," said Smith. "Where do you think they will be?" "Given the troop carriers we fired on, there could be 15 or 20 of them," said Jones. John squatted down on the ground and picked up a small twig on the ground. The parking area near the vans was flat and sandy. "Here are the 4 access doors," he said, drawing the layout of Site R in the sand. 2 here and 2 over here. The 2 A and B hallways are about 300 yards long until they curve together to 1 main hallway. That hallway is about 500 yards long, passes by the underground reservoir, and reaches the power plant here. Go past the power plant, and you reach Building E. That's our destination. The communications center is on the 3rd floor. There is a blast door. Once we're in there, no one can stop us. Now the other entrances are C and D, located way over here on the east side. They also have 300-yard-long hallways, but they connect to a main hallway about a half mile long. It turns right at the domestic water supply pump station. We go past the east power plant and start at Building A. We have to go through the shopping areas that makes up the ground floor of the first 4 buildings to get to Building E. The Camp David access door is right over here. He pointed with the stick down the road they had just driven earlier. It has a 6-mile hallway, but it connects a 1/4 mile behind the connector for access doors C and D. It is brand new and known only to Secret Service because this is the president's access. Only our cards will open it. John was the only one of the team that had seen this tunnel. "I don't suppose we have any night vision," asked Jones. "It wouldn't do any good in there," said John, shaking his head. "It's a cave, remember? If we kill the lights, it will be completely black. I think they'll try to stop us at the access halls of the west and east entrances. We should be able to get behind them and into the communications center without being detected, said John. Enoch approached them from behind. He was at least 6 inches taller than Smith. Standing between them, he placed one of his enormous hands on Smith's shoulder and the other one on Jones's shoulder. You did fine work, my brothers. Do you see the phases? He asked in his deep voice. We did, said Smith, nodding slightly. We were weightless up there, said Jones. It is time we bring in the president and share all Dr. Wesson's findings. We should retreat into the woods and find respite until darkness. Our adversary is expecting us now. He paused for a few seconds. Let doubt become our ally, not our enemy. And with that he squeezed the shoulders of the two men firmly and smiled. Where's the nearest clearing? Asked Smith, with renewed confidence in his direction. There's a vehicle storage building in a clearing about 400 yards south of the East Power Plant. It is about 2 miles through the woods this way, said John, pointing to the rear of the front van. Okay, let's go. When we get there, flash the coordinates to Marine 1, said Smith. With that, the five men divided up to their vans and they headed down the trail road toward the clearing. Where are we going now? Asked Loretta. To a clearing not far away. The president will meet us there, said Smith. Those guys back there shot at us, said Dick. Why? The information that Dr. Wesson has is vital to national security. There are some that do not want this information to be known, said Smith. Each of you has been called together for this team for a reason, said John. Each of your abilities is part of this plan. I don't mean to bust your balloon there, Agent John, but it doesn't seem to me like any of you have a plan. This planet is coming apart at the seams, and there is no plan that I can see, said Bet. No one spoke for several seconds while the discomfort of what Bet had said sunk in. They were without a clear direction. They were innocent participants, each of whom connected the team better than they knew. The sun cast long shadows by the time their vans made it to the small clearing around the maintenance vehicle shop. The parking lot was empty, and the garage doors were closed. Tall evergreen trees surrounded the small amount of asphalt and the block building with a silver metal roof. Smith texted the coordinates to Marine 1, and he waited for an acknowledgement. Within seconds, his phone vibrated with the response. They'll be here in a few minutes. The president? He's coming here? Asked Rhino. Stay inside until the helicopter is gone, said Smith. There will be loose gravel and sticks kicked up. Kyle had fallen asleep on the bench seat behind them with his laptop on his chest. The van load was quiet. Every life had changed in recent days. Some had looked forward to this day with endless hours of study and calculations. Some had been told stories since their youth in preparation for events for which they would play crucial roles. Some had supplied key technologies that delivered the entire mission to this point in safety. One, however, was a witness. To him had been given the first sign that the end of the age had arrived. His heart was tender at this moment, and for the first time in his life he wished he was somewhere else. Smith, came the quiet inquiry from Orphan. How are you doing, son? Asked Smith as he moved from the front bench of the van back to where he was sitting. Standing, he held out his hand to shake his hand. Orphan responded by extending his hand, but the grip was weak and vacant. Can I call my dad? He asked, with the little boy reaching out of him. Sure. Here you go, said Smith as he handed him his cell phone. We have a few minutes until the president arrives. Go outside if you need to. Thanks. Orphan opened the side door of the van and stepped out onto the gravel parking lot. He dialed the private number and waited for the answer. "Dad?" "You made it. Hadid got you?" "He sent two Secret Service agents, Smith and Jones. We're at Camp David, waiting to meet the president." "Riker?" "He's a good man. Are you all right?" Abdullah perhaps expected Orphan to grow up too fast. He knew there would be terrible trials for this boy. His own past would haunt him. But there he knew Orphan was wiser than his years. He had known from dreams that this son was being saved for a special purpose. He was important to God. "Well, yes, but I miss you. I miss Mom." "I know. We'll be together soon." "Well, that's maybe why I'm calling. They say the planet is coming apart. It's dying. I don't know what to do." "The ancient records speak of this," he said in Farsi. "Earth may pass away, but our souls will live forever. We never lose each other." The words sounded so poetic in this language. But was he sure? "But Dad, I saw it. I saw the waves. They lied. We lost 11 men on that rig, and they lied." "I know. The top people knew when the sign would occur. They moved their money. I know everything. But you don't need to worry about that. You stay close to Hadid. His father saved my life 2 times. We have a tradition," he said with the best encouragement he could muster. He was a faithful man, but he had sinned as well and wondered if God would grant him one last prayer. "Dad?" "Yes, son." "I love you." "You are more than water in the desert to me," he said in Farsi, so poetic. "I will see you soon?" "Yes, son, I promise." This time, he got to connect to his dad. There were no games. There were no hard words to be brave or to never let down his guard. All of those years of discipline and challenge were to prepare him for this. He felt peaceful. He felt loved. What more could any man want in his life, he thought. He walked back to the van where Smith was waiting outside the door. "Are you okay?" "Yeah, it's all good," he said. He handed the phone back to Smith. Smith put his hand on Orphan's shoulder and looked into his eyes. No longer able to hold it back, Orphan wrapped his arms around the neck of Smith and buried his face in his shoulder. Pausing only for a second, he returned the embrace and patted him firmly on the back to let him know everything was strong. He was done. He took a deep breath and released Smith. They nodded to each other, and Orphan climbed back into the van. Smith took a deep breath and flexed his powerful shoulders into the warm spring sunshine. The worst was yet to come, he thought. Just then he heard the quiet and distant thumping sound of Marine One, and it suddenly came in across the treetops and leaned back for a short landing. He squinted and moved behind the van until the rotors had quit cutting the air. He ran to the helicopter just as the air stairs were coming down. The president was standing at the top of the stairs. He quickly came shuffling down to shake Smith's hand. He looked up and saw John, Enoch, and Jones standing in front of 2 white vans next to a small block building. They quickly walked to the vans, shook hands, and the agents turned their backs to the helicopter, shielding the president as Marine One powered back up and disappeared over the trees. Within seconds, they could hear nothing but the sounds of spring, with birds chirping in the trees around them. "Are you thirsty, Mr. President?" asked Hadid. "Yes, a little. You got some scotch?" "Sorry, Mr. President." "Red or blue?" asked Jones as he held up the bottles of Powerade. "Red is fine. Is this my team?" he said, cracking a bottle open and taking a sip. "And then some," said Smith. "Hadid will introduce everyone." "This is Dr. Loretta Wesson," said Hadid. "Ah, yes. You're the one with the thesis full of clues," he said, shaking her hand. "And these are my grad students. This is Bette Dyson." Bette stepped forward with her manly handshake, and said, "Nice to meet you, Mr. President. And this young man is Rhino. He's the Rhino, not the running back Rhino. Yes, sir, that would be me, Rhino, at your service, Mr. President. And these two men saved our lives back in California. Richard Daring is a famous race car driver," he said, pointing to Dick. "And this is his engineer, and I might say an extraordinary genius and handy to have around," said Hadid. "Mr. President," they each said, shaking Riker's hand, "this young man is a special charge of mine. He was there when the first waves came through," said Hadid with great respect. "The witness. Nice to meet you," said Riker. "Orphan Bayezid," he said with a nod and a handshake. "Wait. Bayezid, isn't he the owner of the L.A. Times?" "Yes, sir. That is my father. You know, I probably would not be president without him." "Really?" said Orphan with a smile on his face. "Really. Don't tell anyone. But he ran all my ads for a dollar." "Something about that man," said Riker, holding up his index finger. "My friends, we have a mission at hand, and the hour is drawing near," said Enoch from behind them all. He always seemed to know the right thing to say at the right time. "Yes. Well, where do we start?" asked Riker.